I thought I'd talk about the Sunshine Committee. There's no activity that we do that is more important. What we do on Sunday mornings brings people together and can recharge their batteries and give folks inspiration. What we do out in the world is very important because it changes the world and it changes us. And part of what we do in the world is supporting each other in times of need. When someone is sick, when someone is depressed, when there are emergencies and limitations and people need help, shopping, going to doctor's appointments, somebody sometimes just to talk to. The caring that we give each other in the form of that support and the cooking is has been, for the most part, exemplary. I've gotten so much good feedback on how important it has been that somebody showed up at a hospital and just spent time with them, that somebody showed up with a casserole or a covered dish, that somebody took one of our members or friends to a doctor's appointment. All of these things are really important. I was trained to believe that, but I didn't really learn it for myself until I had a medical emergency and I was in an ICU and was intubated and couldn't speak. And a friend of mine, who is a minister, a Unitarian minister, came by and just sat with me and held my hand. And that was a good piece of learning for me, because he didn't do anything. He was just there. He didn't solve my problem. He didn't take the tube out, make the infection go away. He kept me company. And that's the first responsibility that we have to each other, is to be there. There are problems and pitfalls in terms of what we do in Sunshine, because there are also issues of boundary, of things that we may be asked to do that are not appropriate, and things that we may be asked to do that might be appropriate for somebody else to do, but not for us. When I make a call on somebody, if they ask me to move a table, I'm going to call up some Mike with a good back, either this Mike or Mahaffey. You have a relatively good back still, correct?
So far, yeah.
I'm going to call up somebody who can do it. If somebody asks for a repair, I'm the wrong guy. No, the critical issue here is to know what your skill set is, both physical and emotional, what you're comfortable with, and what is just a bridge too far. We're all really nice people, and we want to say yes to everything, but sometimes it's more important to say no and not mess it up. When you're called, what we are not in the Sunshine Committee is we're not psych emergency, and we're not therapists, and we are not fixers. We are, in a sense, first responders who bring presence first, warmth second, but a sense of integrity about what we do and what we don't do. The issue of our personal boundaries gets a little bit tricky, because one, we are people and human beings and owe each other just human services. We're also representatives of the church and are projecting both our services and some vulnerability and liability. So there are things that you probably should not get involved in, even if you're comfortable, and that is in investment decisions, in making bank deposits in somebody's absence, in doing things that you might think are perfectly normal and sensible, but could expose you. It's important to understand that that we're not therapists. We're company. I'm not a therapist. I'm a counselor. I see people usually up to three times in a crisis situation, and if they need ongoing work, I refer out. There are exceptions to this. Death and dying is an exception to that rule, but that's a trained specialty. But for most of us, it is to do kind of the easy things and to be honest in terms of saying no to the things that you don't feel comfortable doing. There are certainly needs and demands that are real and legitimate that we get asked to fulfill that we can't and that aren't appropriate. There are people whose difficulties are chronic, and we can touch hands and touch base and check in and spend time, but, and I say this more to the men than to the women, because women know this better than men. I know it's a terrible sexist thing that I've just said, but men often have a default position of, it's my job to fix it. And if there's a problem, you know, somebody calls me, I got to find a way to fix it. Sometimes you just have to be there and understand that you can't lift the table or build the sun deck or deliver the therapy or give somebody good critical advice at a junction in their lives. You give somebody good critical company at a junction in their lives, and you listen. And here is really one of the hardest things to deal with, and that's the issue of confidentiality. My default position when I make a hospital call or a home call is that anything that my presence there is not public, even though I walked in and I signed in, even though people saw me walk into an apartment or a condo. Who I visit is privileged unless the person I visited releases me to share it at joys and sorrows, or releases me to try to find help for a situation that I'm not competent to deal with. I think it should also be your default position that the things that people tell you and share with you is privileged unless either released by them, and you can ask, can I share this with the rest of the committee, or can I share it with John? The exception to that, there are two exceptions. One is danger, and they're related, danger to self or others. If somebody is suicidal, then somebody needs to know. If it's imminent, you need to call 911. If they're just talking and you think they would benefit, please let me know. And let them know. There's no confidentiality when somebody presents as being a danger to themselves. You have to use a little bit of common sense. When somebody says, I have a headache, I feel like shooting myself, that may be hyperbole. But when somebody makes a meaningful gesture or shares that, that is not privilege. The first duty is towards life. And even if it's going to make them angry and they never come to church again, our value system is we will lose a member before we will lose a life. I've had situations where I have essentially breached confidentiality because the person was a danger to themselves and I had to call psych emergency, and people occasionally got angry. But the hierarchy is, as much as we value your membership, we actually value the life more than the membership. And the other half of that are what are called the Tarasoff warnings. If somebody shares that they are going to do violence to someone else, there's an affirmative duty to warn that other person or to warn somebody in authority. But those are the only exceptions. Otherwise, check out and treat it as confidential. The horror cases that every clergy person just dreads and most of us have seen in one way or another, and I'll exaggerate this only slightly, is somebody gets up at joys and sorrows and talks about, you know, Per Irving, who's not responding to the Viagra, or Mary Alice, whose herpes is breaking out and it's driving her crazy. That's not appropriate. And even when either Irving or Alice gets up and shares it themselves, it's also probably not appropriate, but it's not your problem. You should really have an idea of what your limits are in terms of time, whether you're available to and make it in your own head and make it explicit when you're called upon. If you can make two or three hospital visits in a month, and or whether you really want to make one. If you can cook once a week or once a month, know what your limits are. If someone is overly demanding with issues, understand that you don't have to say yes to everything. I mean, I have been in situations where somebody was turning down covered dishes because it didn't meet their dietary requirements. And I'm not talking about somebody who may simply be a vegan, but was exercising. Let's see, how can I put this? We had a Peace Corps volunteer in Tunisia who found a street cat who had been making a very nice living off of scraps and cobblestones. And this cat trained her within 10 days that it would only eat fresh fish bought daily. Don't fall into that trap either. Having a sense of the limits of your skill set and of your time are really important, and being able to say, no, I'm not comfortable with that, is important. If it's an iffy or questionable issue, call me or email me anytime. My cell phone, I believe, is in the book, as well as my home phone. And the cell phone's in the book, not just for gross emergencies, but if you need to check in or ask something. I wouldn't list it if I weren't happy to receive 99% of the calls that I receive. There's always 1%. I'm not a saint, okay? There are people who can try your patience, but really rarely. Really rarely. And let me see if I did my list here. Or did I sit on my list? No, there it is. Don't, as part of the committee, and as a church member, it's usually not a good idea to be involved in giving somebody loans and bridge loans. We've had the situation come up from time to time, and we've had congregants give loans, and sometimes gifts. You will remember from Hamlet, even though it's the clown that says it, neither a borrower nor a lender be. When I give grants out of my ministerial discretionary account, it is always a gift, not to be paid back. So part with nothing that you expect back. When that happens, I give it to somebody and I say, when you're in a position to repay it to someone else. Because there's nothing that will keep people farther away from us than their sense of guilt and embarrassment that they can't repay the money. Asking for help. You're not a bank, not a therapist. Yeah. An iffy area is in referrals. And I'm often a little uncomfortable myself with that. I do make referrals to therapists. I have from time to time made referrals to lawyers when there's a legal issue. I generally try to disclose to people that I'm not a therapist, and unless you are, you should disclose that also, and that I'm not a lawyer. And when we get into the areas of advice, that's really tricky. Think of yourself more in terms of company and a resource than being somebody offering good advice. And I know that it's not a fine line, it's a big, fat, blurry line. But as today's sermon started out, start with an inventory of your skill set, of your comfort zone, and don't get pushed out of your comfort zone. If it doesn't feel right, if it doesn't feel like you're feeling good about it, then stop and share your discomfort first with yourself and then with them, or with me if you're looking to get reinforcement for those positions. Questions?
Can I just add one thing?
You can add 12 things.
The other side of the referral thing is that because this group, this committee, has been in place for so long, one of the things that has accumulated are some referrals that we count on, that we know we can use outside of law, outside of therapy. People that as an organization that have already been vetted and all that kind of thing, that we can trustfully say, call this place. They can help you do what you need to do. Yes. If you've got a backyard thing, you know, I'm perfectly comfortable. I know some Boy Scouts. I know some Girl Scouts. I know some kids that need service hours here in our kids group. There's things that we can refer. Please ask. That's all you need to do is call. Because there are things, I can't move a table either, but I'm pretty sure I can get you somebody that can.
So in that situation, we would call you?
Either call me or call John. As committee head, I would like to be able to intercept some of these calls so John doesn't have to take all of them. Just because, and I'm sure Marlies knows too, when you've been doing it a while, you know which ones you can play and say, hey, we don't do that.
Sure.
You know, that's...
And you have a list of someone needs.
Yes.
Okay, good.
Or I know the next person to call. If I say, okay, this is the problem, where's the answer? You know, just so that John doesn't have to take every single one of them. I mean, that's kind of why, you know, we have a Sunshine Committee. But there are really responsible, reliable places we can refer to that aren't law, that aren't therapy, that are just the day to day, like people go home from the hospital, you know, whatever. So there are things. And then the only other thing I would add to what he was saying, too, is because we are such a close-knit, friendly group, be careful. The things we do here in conversation, I get calls saying, I just heard, please send a card, please send a plant, please, do what you do. I just heard, I do the same thing that John's talking about. We have to make sure that it's okay to go that next step. Because just because Joe Blow said it to you and your best buddies and go have a beer together doesn't mean he wants me to know. And it certainly doesn't mean he wants the whole rest of us to know. So just as you hear stuff that you think needs to be passed on, just check it with that person first and then make that next call. Thank you.
What she said. So have all of you, I mean, every grown-up has probably visited somebody in a hospital. Mm-hmm. A couple of things. You look like death is not a good opening line. wash your hands going in, wash your hands going out. And I can tell you that even in pastoral counseling training, we were taught, do not overstay 20 minutes. And there are occasional exceptions to that, but people usually in hospitals need some rest, and they're not getting it from the nurses and doctors. So, again, you don't have to solve the problem. You can ask questions when somebody seems like they're a little bit isolated, whether they have an aftercare plan, whether a social worker has been in to talk about where they're going when they're discharged from the hospital. Just, again, be company. You don't have to be necessarily entertaining, and you don't have to fix things. If you have special skills, it's okay not to forget them. I personally saved a life on at least one occasion when I saw somebody was getting the wrong med, and I knew beforehand that this was a person who had an anaphylactic reaction to penicillin, and there was a cillin about to go in an IV tube. And I got it stopped. I got a doctor in there. But I had specialized knowledge and did that. Otherwise, I don't try to second-guess nurses and physicians. They tend not to like it, and I'm more likely to be wrong than right. But again, you err on the side of life if you think that there's something that's life-threatening. I don't go in and normally try to change somebody's drugs or dosage or tell them, well, I saw an ad for a drug that's supposed to be much better. You're there for company and for emotional support. It's really important not to believe that the job is to fix things. The job is to be good company, to render some service, and to the level and the limit that you will feel good about. If you start feeling bad, that's a sign that you need help. And it's not a question of, well, this person is overusing me, so I'm just not going to deal with them at all. You can also say, I can see you, or I can respond in this way once a week or once a month, and you can call the committee to get somebody else to back you up. If the need is legitimate and more than you can fulfill, ask for help. It doesn't have to be all or nothing. It has to be what your boundaries are, and then get some help.
But we do have limitations.
Go on with that thought, as Bob Newhart would say.
We have a particular idea. I mean, we are a caring committee for people that are having difficulties.
Right.
There are, I mean, having referrals to different things. But there is, and we will be asked to do things that are way outside the range. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to give any examples because mention the people. But we have to be careful and consult one another and talk to John if we can't come to a conclusion on that.
The other side of that, too, is most people, you'll find out, most people just want to be asked. When I broke my foot in, I mean, I'm a real good example. I'm Miss Independent, I can do it all. I broke my foot in January. I had three people call and say, what do you need? What, I don't need anything. How are you going to cook dinner with crutches? I mean, and for 4 days, 5 days, people, sometimes people just need to be asked. Because a lot of the time, we think we're a lot tougher and stronger than we are. And it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing what a dish of chicken and rice can do when you're standing there on crutches. Trust me. And we'll be told no. And see, that's the other side of it. Some people just want to be asked. They just, you know.
The no is an interesting issue because for me, I'll generally try to err on the side of contact. And so when somebody says no, sometimes I don't ask. But there are people that I know that when they say no, they damn well mean no, and I'll get shot if I walk in the door. And so you don't always take it as face value. There's some people that just say, no, you know, I'm not worth it, or it's nothing. And it's okay to push a little bit without being too pushy. But hear what ultimately it is that they're really saying. Because people are different and give different kinds of signals. Fred?
Yeah, well, Barbara's a good example. I mean, people really...
Loud enough for the mic.
I'm sorry. Barbara's a good example. I mean, when she broke her foot... I heard about it and I called. What I wasn't able to quite gauge is when she didn't need help anymore. And that's sort of, you know, I think that's part of, you know, protecting people's privacy and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew Barbara well enough that I could call again and say, are you covered? And she said, yeah. Oh, well, I'm off the hook. Somebody else did it. You know,
right.
With other people, I'm sort of wondering, well, should I... are they really covered, or is it just, you know, people have gotten busy or whatever, you know?
That's what it's good to check back with me or with you, because we tend to, once we go into something, we generally have an idea what the problem is, and by that, how long we keep checking back before we finally wear out our welcome or wear us all out. I mean, I generally try to find out the difference between the flu and a heart attack.
Right.
You know? So we need, you know, so that's kind of what I try to do is to estimate what that person's asking for time-wise, not just each, you know, but so I can spread it out if it looks like it's going to be a more long-term thing or just a couple days.
Yeah, I guess I know.
So communication is the biggest part of this committee, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
If we talk to each other, if you guys talk to me, you know, I always talk to John. And if I can intercept, like I said, some of those calls, that's cool. But if call whoever, but talk to, you know, we just need, the whole thing is just make sure it's okay to go that next time.
Yeah.
Wherever you heard that, clear it.
And the other thing is that it's not a tragedy if two different people in terrible inefficiency end up visiting somebody in the hospital.
Or two meals get sent on the same day, or two sets of flowers get sent.
And, you know, I see people just who are thrilled and surprised that people that they hardly knew showed up or dropped by a hospital or called and asked if they could bring a dish. That even if the dish doesn't get delivered, the message and the caring get delivered in the offer when it's real. And that makes people feel like they're valued. And that feeling is appropriate, and that's what this committee is about. Sometimes, you know, we're called Sunshine, and everybody in principle is a member, but sometimes it's raining, you know, and sometimes you're there and you're crying with somebody, not just laughing. But it's important for you also, and it goes back to me, one of the really critical issues that I've talked about now three times, which is, don't expect to fix it. Expect to be company. And sometimes that involves holding somebody's hand and crying with them. And if they're still sad when you've left, it may be a situation where it's appropriate to be sad. One of the things, you know, when there's bad disease or death in congregation or family, somebody will ask, how's so-and-so doing? The answer is usually not fine. The question, the answer is whether someone's appropriate or not. That's the critical issue. When somebody is in the hospital and they're scared to death of death, it's not appropriate that they're sunny and singing. When there's been a loss in the family and somebody says, well, at least they won't suffer and at least this and at least that, if it looks like denial, again, it's not your job to be a therapist, but understand that there's also grieving underneath whatever the surface affect is. And the big question that individuals in Sunshine in some ways have to answer for themselves is not, is this person in pain, but is this person in appropriate pain? And everybody handles, you know, death, disease, fear, divorce, kids, I was about to go to that, kids differently. And the question is being in touch. I remember many years ago, I got out of the swimming pool and my heart was beating a syncopated rhythm. And they put a 24-hour halter on me. And my best friend called me up and said, how are you doing? I said, well, I'm scared to death. He said, good. You know, I just wanted to see if you were in touch with reality. You know, there are times when if you're feeling good, it's the wrong response. You can give people encouragement, but probably don't assist them in denial. Because sometimes you have to feel what you feel, and just be company on that journey. You look like you have a question or comment.
Oh, no, this is all just so interesting, and I'm just taking it all in. I mean, I'm just, for me, I had two babies and two major health crises before coming here. And the crises, I needed every bit of help that my circle offered. But with the babies, I didn't want anybody around and I didn't want food delivered. And maybe Lewis would say, yeah, that would have been nice. But I don't know. That's just me, you know. I just wanted to sort of be with my baby, my husband, and my mom. And that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, and you have to pick up those signals also when that's the case. That's probably the hardest one. If you think a normal person would want contact and you're being turned down, then call Barbara or me, and I'll try to hear you out and see. Because there are people for whom that's a style and that's really valid. And there are people who are in extremis and they just go, I don't want anybody. Most of the time in counseling, I tell people, trust your instincts to the people who come to me. Because most of the time our instincts are pretty good. But there's a time when that isn't. There are times when people are in huge pain or depressed and they withdraw and they go, okay, I'm fine, I'm fine. Leave me alone, I'm fine, I'm fine. Well, that's the one time when their instincts can't be trusted, but it's not your job to completely break through. It's your job to offer, but if you can, let me know. Because that one area where we feel the most unlovable is when we most need somebody to love us and to have their arms open. So this is, as I say, these are fuzzy boundaries, not fine lines. And you have to use judgment, you have to listen. And most of the time you're going to listen to what they say and believe it. But if something isn't ringing true or you just can't believe that it's okay for them to be isolated, then let Barbara know or let me know.
Yeah, you just want a second opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of the times I just don't want to make that call. So that's when I call John and say, okay, I'm not sure.
And listen, and I've called 911 on people who said, I don't want you to call 911. And again, it's very, very clear to me that somebody's health and life more important about whether or not they like me that week. And even when they were mad when I called 911, not a single one has ever stayed mad. Helene was telling a story yesterday. She had taken Will to the skirball. She had taken him a year before, and Will was 3.5 years old at the time. And he went dashing out into the parking lot, and she screamed at him. And he started crying. She said, you're running in the parking lot. She said, I know where to stop, and I'm mad at you. And she said, okay. Are you going to be mad at me tomorrow? I don't think so. So, you know, sometimes you do things that are somewhat uncomfortable. But this is one of the times when motive counts. If you really think that the person is in some danger, even if they're saying, fine, look, I'm not a doctor. The last time this happened, I called one of the committee members for backup and said, all my instincts are, we're calling 911. And so that's what we did. And I think it made a difference. I know it made a difference. So that's, you know, the extremis thing is where you clearly violate the issue of privacy. But other than that, there's always a fine line between information and gossip. And that's a fine line. No, I'm sorry. That's a fuzzy line, too. Don't cross it. But it's tough. It's tough to know. It really is. So the best thing to do is try to be explicit. May I share this? And if the answer is no, if it's not life-threatening, honor it. If it is life-threatening, don't. Or if you feel uncomfortable, check it out, because generally it's not considered a violation if you're sharing it with somebody who does have priest-penitent confidentiality, which is what I consider myself to have. Stuff will not get past me unless it's in that critical area. Any other questions or issues that I'm not seeing in the back of my head? Barbara? Anything?
Oh. I have to say something.
Sure.
You didn't hold my hand.
I did.
You didn't know.
I absolutely held your hand. See, it really gets into this. Can I talk about that visit?
You can.
Okay, good. When she was in the hospital and I got news of the automobile accident, and incidentally, I've had two more of that automobile accident this week, and I've been in the hospital twice this week with surging cars into crashes. You were bubbling and delighted that there were people who had been that got there before me. I was the third member of this congregation to hit that hospital room, and you were very happy. And I did hold your hand. I did hold your hand, and I have independent recollection of it because, truthfully, it was the first time I noticed the tremor. But you also you know, sitting and holding somebody's hand can be important. I wasn't there for a very long time because your mother-in-law came in, caught us holding hands, so I let go because I really... No, was that your mother or mother-in-law?
Mother-in-law.
Mother-in-law, okay, yeah. So, you know, you got to be a little discreet. Anything else?
And my second observation is that Barbara is the best coordinator. I don't know what she has, maybe those little wrinkly heels. I called her one day, I was being discharged and I needed bedding for my rental, my hospital bed. I called her when I came back from therapy. The sheets were in my bed in the hospital. How did she do that?
But see, that's not me. See, that's the whole important thing everybody's got to know. That's the communication. That's the, it's like I was just telling somebody before John got here, just within the last couple weeks, I got a call. I need a ride home from the hospital in the next couple hours. I'm on my way out the door. There's nothing I can do. I said, all I can do is make a couple calls. And someone was there. It's who we are as a group. It is not me. It is not any one of us. Believe me. It is such a group effort that makes this so successful. Yeah. And I come with the expertise and the people that came before me. I mean, I didn't know how to do this. I didn't know what this was when I stepped in. And it just turned out to be something, because I had the little kids, because it was something I could do from home, that I said, okay, I'll try it. But it's certainly not any one of us. That's what you guys need to understand. And every single person.
And you're also not bound in terms of when you're looking for help, the people who are here. If you know have a resource in the congregation or somebody who could help, you can reach out to that resource. I would reach out to them directly and not give a number as a referral, again, unless you have permission. You know, I may know that somebody is a plumber or electrician, but my job will be to call them, not to say, so-and-so can probably fix this, and give the person the number, because that ends up volunteering that other person and putting them in a very awkward position if they don't want to do that. So, but most of the time, most of the time the answer is going to be yes. But again, if you don't hand the number over unless it's kind of pre-approved. Yes?
I have a comment. When it comes to helping the person that's physically disabled, whether it be permanently or temporarily, it's a good idea to ask them, how can I help you? Because I have experienced over and over again this situation where, for instance, for me to get up from the chair, I need to push down, right? And to go up when I was on my crutches all the time, I had to push on my crutches to go up a step. Well, I had a lot of people come over, I'll help you. And they grab the arms and pull up, which
takes,
is for people who are maybe weak. But not. So we're working against each other. I'm frantically trying to push down here, and they're pulling my arms up. So it's important to say, how can I help you? Mm-hmm. And the person would let you know promptly that you know what would be most helpful.
Mm-hmm.
That's also a good example, though, of how we might take that information and get to people that do that all the time, as opposed to, like, there's no way, not you personally, but there is no way I would go try to help someone physically like that. Number one, because I already know my limits, but also because I don't know what to do. But there are people that do, and there are people that have for a long period of time. Of time. And that's kind of that line that John's talking about. There are some things that, you know, handing somebody crutches is one thing. Helping somebody get around that is totally physically dependent on somebody requires, I think, a different kind of skill. Mm-hmm. So I would certainly plug that into the system and see where we're at. Because yes, we do need to ask, what do you need for help? But we also have to understand, if that's not something we can do safely and comfortably, then let's just get to the ones that can.
I see her also saying, though, rather than just jumping in and trying to pull her up, ask how you can help her.
Exactly.
In other words, if someone's getting in and out of a chair and they seem stuck and you come over to them, you don't just push them back into the chair.
People push them back
down into the chair. You would ask them, can I help? And if you have a good back and you're willing to do it and everything, mm-hmm. how can I help you? What do I need to do? And they will, if they've been doing this for 20 years, 5 years, they will tell you, well, you need to do this and let this part go down and just hold my shoulders, just hold my arms. They'll tell you exactly mm-hmm. what to do. We have to be careful.
Exactly.
But that question has
got to be, the as a Sunshine Committee, that question has got to be our bylaws. What can I do to help?
Yeah.
That has got to be the first thing that we ask once we've got this other information, okay, you know. But because none of us know, whether it's a physical thing, whether it's a casserole, whether it's flowers, what can I do to help? That is most definitely the first thing where we have to go first. And if that's not something we can do comfortably, don't go there.
And I don't want to get into the dangerous legal land, but you also have to evaluate the person that you're dealing with, because there will be a certain, in good faith, well, I'll just talk about my mother. My mother used to regularly accuse people that came into her room of stealing things that she had misplaced. If you're finding somebody in that kind of condition, give the committee a heads up and maybe go over with a second person. Because the last thing you want to have to deal with is being accused of something inappropriate. And sometimes in absolutely good faith. I'm not casting aspersions on my mother's character, only her memory. But this is something that happens often with an elderly population, not always. But it's something to be aware of and not to be put in a position where you're vulnerable to that, if at all possible.
Sadly, I would do that with kids, too, because of the environment that we're in. If we were going to do something with somebody's kids, just like with Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts, I would take a second person.
Yeah. And I'll tell you the semi-funny, brief thing, which is the biggest fight I ever got into. Basically doing sunshine work was taking somebody to a doctor's appointment who absolutely was refusing to wear a seatbelt. And I absolutely refused to drive. I used the same stuff as in the kids. This car doesn't move, and I got the whole, well, it's uncomfortable across my chest, and it's this, and it's that. And I said, I understand perfectly, but if you want to keep the doctor's appointment, you're going to have to do that, you know. And so that you have to do some things kind of defensively because, you know, strangely, cars impact just as hard in only 1 mile as going on 50 miles. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm a retainer and I can't talk very well. Well, this is not necessarily the specific thing, but the idea of it, when I was forcibly volunteered by my mom at a nursing home as a teenager, one of the things they told us is don't change things just because someone tells you to. Because there were people who were no longer capable of remembering that the reason they were tied into their wheelchair is that they would stand up and fall flat.
Yeah.
And they'd say, oh, this is bothering me, couldn't you do that? Trying to be aware that, you know, you need to look at a big picture. You need to be aware that restraints are often for safety. And if it doesn't look like it's for safety, you have to talk to someone.
Incidentally, that's a really good point. If you visit either a hospital or convalescent facility and you see something that looks like it's abuse, please call me anytime. Please, because that does happen. And I have seen people who were restrained not for their safety but for the convenience of the staff. I unfortunately can't get into the medical issues when people are being given what some mental health workers call vitamin H, Haldol, in order to narcotize them so that they don't make trouble. But when you see something and it doesn't smell right, call me. Because that absolutely does happen. The other thing is that in like baby-proofing a house. If you're going to somebody who's had falling episodes, you know, you can look around the house and have a conversation about throw rugs, carpets, footstools, and just at least raise those issues about maybe getting somebody in to evaluate the safety of the house, pull bars and other sorts of things where people are compromised. You'll often find that the person may not be very agreeable or happy about that, but it's a conversation that it's okay to open up, but just don't take their freedom away and tell them what they must do. And again, if you find somebody that you think is in an isolated situation and that they are not properly able to handle that, talk to me. You know, one of the things that if I could create a conflict of interest, I would invest in the emergency safety alerts, the panic buttons, because frankly, anybody who lives alone, whatever your age, you can fall in the bathtub, you can trip on a rug, and I've had 50-year-olds who were on the floor and couldn't get to a phone. So, and when you're dealing with an older or somebody who has some clear infirmities, that's one area where I tend to get not nasty aggressive, of course, but at least to have that conversation, because it only takes one time laying on the floor for 30 hours, and it's very unpleasant. And I've fallen in my own backyard and couldn't get up, and I was screaming for 45 minutes before somebody found me. So that's a conversation also to have when you're evaluating somebody's living situation. There are people who, for reasons of pride and a sense of autonomy, don't want the grab bars and don't want some of the things that might make their lives a little safer. But you can have those conversations softly. Anything else? Because I think we're about gone.
Just going to throw one thing out real quick, too. When we take food, one thing I ask is about allergies. Having a granddaughter that has a horrible nut allergy, one thing I ask is if we're going to take food somewhere, whether or not there's an allergy there. So we need to check, even if you don't talk to me, ask before you take something, just to make sure, you know, we don't make the situation worse.
And I should probably disclose, as some people know, I have a relatively recent and life-threatening allergy to dogs. I've always had an allergy to cats, and they make my nose run and itch and stuff, and a little bit of a wheeze, but it's not dangerous. I have an allergy to dogs that developed that's actually life-threatening. It's like Shadid, who died with a horse allergy in Syria. I get very serious respiratory distress. So for the people who own dogs, I'll see you in the hospital when you're there. And if I come to your house, you'll see me in the hospital if I stay more than 5 minutes. I know almost immediately when I come in. And so I'm not being rude, but I try to stay out of the doghouse.
Most husbands do.
And most husbands fail. Well, thank you all. And the big message is, when issues come up, call me. I want to be called. Okay?
Thank you, John.
Thank you.